Welcome to another episode of Pat and the Fat Man. We like to talk about movies, sports, and whatever else we feel like. I'm Pat.
And I'm the Fat Man.
And today, we're getting back at it. Back on the train, back on the trolley, back in the cartoon car. Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Perhaps we will get a little further than 11 minutes. But I'm not betting on it. Wouldn't bet on it, folks. Going to have a long talk about some iced tea, about some bullets, maybe if we get that far, about some maroon cartoons.
Movie theaters.
Oh, that's right. Old-timey movie theaters. Last we had our heroic heroes. Roger had escaped being summarily executed Judge Dredd style in the middle of a bar by Judge Doom and his weasels.
I don't know if you could say Judge Dredd style. Judge Dredd would at least shoot you, make it quick.
Well, yeah.
I think Holocaust style is more the way.
Yeah, nobody melts people. Like, that's right? That's a ridiculous way to execute somebody because, like, I mean, it takes a long time. Like, most executioners over the course of history are tainted by the experience of execution. Them and their whole families are typically pariahs within their community. They keep to themselves. They eat really well because they eat with the condemned. So they're always eating the last meal, which is usually the best meal the condemned gets, but it's like normal for the executioner and his family and the mayor, who's typically also there, and the sheriff. But it's, you know, they're kind of pariahs from the community, and it's done in at least a solemn manner.
Right.
You know, even today with our secularized world where we execute people, we still do it in a fairly solemn manner. This was like in a bar
on the spot
over a barrel.
Right.
We're going to melt this guy in front of all these bar patrons.
I can't wait to melt some more cartoons, you know?
Yeah. Just, are we the bad guys? I feel like maybe we're the bad guys here.
I mean, it was just shy of a uniform of being German.
Mm-hmm. Right, he's all black.
Oh, and the hat.
Yeah.
The hat's very Wild West era kind of religious, like preacher, you know, like they mm-hmm. had those big hats, you know,
the wide brim. Even his like shoulder, I don't even know what you call that, but the almost cape.
Yeah.
Does he have a full blown cape?
I think it is a cape. I think it's like a full wraparound cape. And it's just kind of like that Southern preacher kind of, you know.
It sort of elicits the idea of a judge with the robes, mm-hmm. but also not.
Right.
Because he's sort of this Wild West cowboy judge.
It's a perfect example is in Blazing Saddles. Remember the preacher in that one? He had a big, you know, brimmed hat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're on your own.
yeah and so it's Judge Doom, you know, wandering around the streets of LA dispensing ad hoc justice to the tunes by melting them in front of people, you know, with no repercussions. Right. I don't know, your average guy kills a dog in a crowded room. Like, I feel like there's going to be somebody calls him on it, right?
I think it might even be worse than, like, if they killed a person at this point, you know?
Yeah.
Now
this guy, this guy just commits a war crime in front of everybody. And, well, it's just another day in Hollywood, you know?
Like, well, except for everybody in the bar. Like, everybody in the bar is like, I can't believe I'm watching this, you know?
Yeah.
But they weren't going to leave.
You know, it's the long tale of human history of watching executions as a form of entertainment.
Well, let's give them some credit for not applauding.
Well, you know, this is 1950s America. We're still occasionally lynching people here, sadly.
Yeah.
But for the most part, executions are a fairly private affair that happen within the walls of a jail or a prison, you know, with so many witnesses and the usually a religious figure of some kind, and the executioner and the, you know, the warden and the condemned. but they're fairly private thing. It's not something where you sell tickets to anymore, or you're renting out your third story balcony to onlookers from the countryside because they want to come see somebody get broken on the wheel or something, you know, or even just a simple hanging. Like, this is, you know, 1950s America. We've gotten a little more civilized about our, you know, termination of condemned people. And so, like, these guys, they probably have never seen, like, outside of, you know, the movies, they've probably never seen somebody die.
Except for the guy missing an arm.
Well, yeah. So he, you know, he's been in war. So he's probably just like, yep. just another day.
So, yeah, we catch our heroes, such as they are, fleeing the electric, what is it called? The electric station bar. And they run outside, and Eddie Valiant sees the Weasel's car there. So he grabs Roger and throws him in there. And they're looking around. Where are the keys? Where are the keys? And you hear a voice in the back of the car going, hey, you lousy weasels, let me out of here. And Roger sticks his head in there and goes, hey, Betty, is that you? And he's like, no, it's Eleanor Roosevelt.
Oh, Betty.
It's at this point, Roger squeezes through the little sliding look through and then crawls through there because only a cartoon can squeeze through small spaces.
Yeah.
Turns back around, tells Eddie, hey, I got us a ride. Open the rear. And at that point, you see Eddie holding up a piece of paper that was the love letter Roger wrote on, and then shoved it in his pocket, in his jet coat pocket.
It pops out of Roger's pocket as he squeezes through the hole. So Eddie grabs it.
Right.
As it's going down. This is important for the reason that we said earlier.
Right.
That there are two key things to remember, and this is one of them. See if you remember the first key thing. I think it was from the first episode, maybe the second. I don't know. I don't know how far we got in the first episode.
What year is it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Movie's still a thing.
People still watch movies, maybe, in the theater. I don't know. Thunderbolts was really good, but not enough people saw in the theater.
I know. I wanted to go see it. I didn't.
Oh, it was so good.
And I was hoping it was coming around. I saw Jurassic Park, which was good, and I need to go see Superman now. But
yeah,
I need to catch up on some other Marvel movies. But anyways, I digest. So Eddie gets out of the vehicle, goes to the back. He opens up the double doors on this. I mean, you're a car guy. Do you know what kind of car this is?
It's a paddy wagon.
It's a paddy wagon. That's the technical term. GM paddy wagon. Yeah,
that's
the
technical term. That's right. It's made by Ford Motor Company between the 1936 and 1954. It was discontinued in favor of the Patrick wagon, which was determined to be more DEI friendly.
I get the feeling.
No, I got no clue.
I was going to say.
Yeah, I got no clue. I mean, that's what it is. It's a paddy wagon, but, you know, I mean, which is ultimately a racial slur against Irish people, but, you know, nobody cares when you racially slur against Irish folks. So that's what we'll call it.
Ooh, there's a path that I'm just going to look the other way.
We're going to get into it. We can.
No. No more 11 minutes.
So, yeah, they used to round up Irishmen because drunk and disorderly conduct and jam them into these, you know, police wagons. And so, like, Paddy being a semi slurred version of the name Patrick, you know, it was all Paddies and Bridgets, right? And that was the sort of slur against. You want me to keep going? I can see you smiling. No. That's giving you a history lesson. Oh, my gosh. You asked what the name of the car was.
It was Benny, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So the introduction of the cartoon car, Benny.
Yeah, he opens the double doors and out pops out this cartoon taxi cab. I mean, I want to say Roger's driving, but he's not really. He's just sitting in the driver's seat. That's their getaway vehicle. And when Benny comes out, he goes, I can't believe they tried to lock me up for driving on the sidewalk. And it was only a couple of miles.
It was only a couple of miles. Benny's probably one of my favorite toon characters, if not my favorite toon character in this show.
He's funny in the no-nonsense kind of way, and he's very much like a cabbie, you know?
Yeah, he's a cab who is also a cabbie. and he's also a cartoon. And, you know, unlike Roger, who is just this constant stream of semi to really annoying, you know, cartoonishness, you know, somewhere between, you know, a child and an adult, and plenty of slapstick thrown in there, you know, and you have the weasels who are fairly slapstick, but you're not supposed to like the weasels, and you don't like the weasels because they're weasels. And then you have, you know, Baby Herman and Jessica Rabbit. But I Benny's probably my favorite of the cartoon characters, at least the original cartoon characters.
Do you think that somehow that's how we came up to, like, how the movie Cars came about? Like, the guys at Pixar were watching Who Framed Roger Rabbit and go, Benny's our favorite character, we should do a whole thing around, you know, talking cars.
If I remember correctly, there was an Exxon commercial or a series of Exxon commercials prior to Cars where they had these claymation cars.
Chevron.
Was it Chevron?
It was Chevron.
Okay, it was Chevron. My guess is that was probably more the direct. However, it's very likely that the Chevron commercial was probably inspired somewhat by Benny. I would not doubt that, to be honest, given the timeline. You know, and Pixar movies are always... are kind of what if movies, oh, right? Sure. Like what
toys.
If,
yeah,
you know?
I mean, the yeah, first sure. one being toys, so.
Right. Like what if toys could, you know, move around when nobody's looking except for Sid that one time, which then begs the question as to why Buzz Lightyear doesn't do that all the time since he thinks he's not a toy. But either way, you know, Pixar stuff is all about the what if, which is kind of sad when you think about WALL-E, because it's what if humans trash the planet. and have to live in giant space cruises for
talk about tempting fate. Who knows
how long? Hundreds of years.
So Eddie gets into the driver's seat, saying, "Out of the way, I'm driving." And Roger's like, "I want to drive." And Benny's like, "No, I'll drive. I'm the cab."
I'm the cab. Just the way he talks. It's just so, and I love, how about those Brooklyn Dodgers? Oh, and
like even before that, I go, well, about this weather? It never rains. And those Brooklyn Dodgers, they bums or what?
They bums or what?
You know, all the while he's like zipping around, he's like, you know, almost running into one guy, calling him a pencil neck, you know, splitting between cars. And
yeah.
Look at these bums. Pardon me, ladies. It's just all like cabby commenting stuff as he's driving like crazy.
Yeah,
the weasels start taking chase and start trying to shoot at him.
I'm gonna blow his head off. Which does beg the question, who is he talking about? Because if he shoots Roger, he's a tune.
It's just tune on tune crime, and it's funny, nobody cares.
Right, but like, does it even kill? Like,
yeah, that's fair.
Does a real bullet kill Roger?
Right.
What about the car? So is he shooting at Eddie? Is Eddie the head he's trying to explode? And I kind of have to think the answer is yes. Like he's, which begs another question or a further question, because I don't think the judge's jurisdiction goes to Eddie. Yeah, sure, you melted a tune, but you shot a guy in the street. That kind of feels like that's actual. Like when the police officers show up in the motorcycles, they don't pull their guns. You know, they're not trying to, you know, Indiana Jones.
Right.
Chase, you know, shoot them down. So I'm wondering what the weasels are actually trying to do here.
To be fair, and this isn't a commentary on current issues, but back then, I mean, the police had some pretty loose reins on them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, but like crowded street.
Not that this is a commentary on that. I'm just saying, if you really thought about it, it's like, yeah. But no one's going to question, you know, the judges would say they work for me, you know, they're deputized by me. So,
yeah, I don't know. I still feel like middle of the street, L.A., firing a firearm. I mean, firing a firearm just in general without cause. Like, that's problematic. I don't know. I don't know. The whole thing is a little sketch. But I think that plays into it, like the weasels being. You know, not just weasels in the cartoon sense, but actually being kind of evil.
So they take off. They're going down the street and then they come up to an intersection and a red car passes in front of them. They have to do a U-ey and then they come across an alleyway that they back themselves into and they start going in reverse. And as they start going down the alley, then you see two cops and motorcycles. The cops are behind them in the bikes and Roger's like, the cops are on our tail. And they go down the backwards down the alley. And then Benny's like, no, they're right in front of us.
Yeah, they're right in front of us. Not for long.
Not for long. Right. And then all of a sudden he just flips in midair. And, you know, and then they're going the right direction.
Yeah.
And as just before they get to the end of the alleyway, the weasel squad comes down from the other direction. And the main weasel, I don't remember his name, is like, I'm gonna ram him. and then as they're drawing down on each other, Benny's like, pull the lever. And they're like, which one?
Which lever?
And a little sign pops up, this one stupid. And then or this lever stupid.
This lever stupid. That's such a great gag.
Oh, it's so reminiscent of like Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner. When they do pull the lever, you know, the wheels extend up. So, you know, putting them above the weasel paddy wagon.
Yeah. It's go gadget wheels here.
And then it's just the weasels and, you know, bearing down on the cops. And of course they run into each other.
Which does beg the question, like, okay, let's say Valiant or Benny hits the weasel car. That's going to be a full stop, and those cops are still going to hit the back of Benny and go flying. Like there's no scenario in which these cops don't end up flying over the weasel wagon, like which they do, right? They hit the weasel wagon, and it's funny because you see the weasels, their eyes go giant, right, and fill up the entirety of the windshield on their wagon. The three weasels that are sitting in the front, and I wonder how you win the game with the weasels to front, who gets to sit in front and who's to sit in the back. But the officers hit and they go flying over the wagon, which, you know, hopefully they survived.
And so as Benny's come out of the alleyway and makes a turn, you see them coming up on a bridge and they're still, you know, elevated in the air on the extenders. And Benny's like, hey, Roger, what do you call the middle of a song? And Roger takes a second to think about it and goes, I don't know. What would you call it? Oh, a bridge.
A bridge.
Just, you know, how they lead up into these jokes. I mean, that's what's crazy. Just, you know, the wittiness.
Yeah, it's like typical cartoon banter. The, hey, what do you call a such and such? And then, you know, the thing happens. And I don't know. It's funny because like so much of the stuff that Roger does is just you feel it from Eddie's perspective and it's just annoying and bothersome. But when Benny does stuff, it's funny.
When you think about it, like Benny says these things as if he doesn't worry about what's happening. Like he's just in the moment, you know, because, you know, they go down the alleyway and he's like, now they're right in front of us. And then he comes out and he's like, hey, what do you call the middle of a song? Like, it's just witty. He's not going, dear God, what? I'm about to die. He's like, nope. What's the next thing?
Yeah. Again, that's why Benny's the best cartoon.
Yes.
He's the best original character.
So they end up jumping up onto the bridge and he's like, okay, where to, fellas? And Roger's like, somewhere where we can hide. And Benny's like, oh, I got just the place. And incidentally, if you need a ride, just stick out your thumb. Like talking about hitchhiking.
Yeah. It's important for later. Yet another important for later moment.
So then we jump ahead to what you see is a cartoon of Goofy. And it's like he's coming home from like the gym, like he just looks exhausted and just planks face down. And so it's just these cartoons. And you realize as the camera pans down that you're in a movie theater and everybody's watching cartoons in this movie theater. And as the scene progresses, you realize how big this movie theater is and how almost nobody's in it. But it's a two-tiered movie theater, like with an actual balcony.
Well, the bottom's filled, right? Because
you see
the bottom and it's full of kids. Oh, no, it's full. Like there's tons of kids and possibly adults watching the Goofy cartoon and laughing their heads off.
Right.
Pretty much every version of this that they've done with Goofy has been hilarious. You know, they always do these explanations of how to do something with Goofy over the years. And this was exercise, you know, football was a pretty hilarious one. Setting up the entertainment system was a pretty hilarious one. So like these are always gold. as far as as cartoon comedy goes, goofy stuff. And I love that because, like, Roger basically gives an exposition on that about how amazing Goofy is.
Yeah, that's it. When you critique someone like an actor about, like, his style and finesse and, you know, how he can take a beating like nobody. What
grace.
What style? What finesse?
None of those words apply to Goofy, right? Like you think of Goofy and he's not stylish. He's got no finesse.
Well, it implies he's doing it intentionally, and Roger knows he's right. Doing it intentionally, and he's doing it in such a way that he's convincing you of, like, how good of an actor Goofy is, you know?
Gorsh.
Right. And what's cool about that is, like, you know, and you get more of this a little bit later on. It's just people went to the movie theaters just to watch cartoons. I mean, you don't do that nowadays.
Prior to TVs, right?
Right.
Most people, you know, they had radios at home, but they didn't have TVs. So moving pictures, this is where you did it, right? You went to a movie theater and you bought a ticket to watch for however long. And they would just put stuff on, right? Depending on the theater, it wouldn't necessarily be, you know, they'd have full length picture films, you know, hour or more. Where you would buy a ticket, but a lot of the times just during the day, you could buy a ticket and go and watch. And it was just whatever they were putting on the reels. And right, you can see this play out in this scene where they're watching Goofy on the cartoon. And then when Dolores shows up, it's the news, right? And this is how you got your news reels, right? This is the phrase news reel comes from this. These were news reels that they would intersperse between the entertainment sections in movie theaters. Honestly, this is a pretty well-used, well-known trope in the private detective, you know, noir film thing, right? You have a meeting of some kind that occurs in a movie theater.
Right.
Almost always with the private, you know, and they're hiding out almost always. They're trying to avoid being seen in public. And this is a dark, relatively noisy place where you could talk, you could share information without being overheard. And that's exactly what Eddie and Roger are doing up in the balcony, which is, you know, there's nobody there and they have a little reserve sign. So everybody's down on the floor. So they've got privacy up here. But of course, Roger is making a spectacle of himself while enjoying the movie.
Well, and that's what brings us to the next bit where Valiant picks Roger up by his ears and pulls him, because Roger's up in the front row of this balcony, and he pulls him back to where he's at. And he's like, hey, we're supposed to be hiding. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And now we get into this actual little bit of story here is that Roger's like, what's wrong with you? You know, you're the only person in this theater that's not laughing. What turned you into such an impervious sourpuss?
Well, he says like four different P words while slightly spitting on Valiant the whole time.
Permeate your impervious puss.
Yeah.
And then he tries to make a face at him, trying to get him
see
to laugh. And he's like, nothing. Such a sour puss. And he goes, you want to know? And then he tells the story about how a toon killed his brother and how when they were first detectives and had their own practice, they were investigating the robbery at the First National Bank of Toontown. And he said that they used to like working Toontown because it was a lot of laughs. And he said that the robber got away with a zillion simoleons.
A zillion simoleons. This is how good of an actor that Bob Hoskins is oh that he God. Delivers these lines. It's not in like a completely dead serious way. It's like on the very edge of ridiculous and also serious.
Right. It's believable. It's absolutely believable.
Right.
And you're talking to a guy who, one, doesn't like cartoons, and two, he's not really talking to a cartoon, like, you know, in the actual making of this.
Yeah.
But he does such a good job of delivering it, of making you really get into the story. They said they had trailed the robber down and they thought they had him in an alley, but that he got the drop on him literally and dropped a piano from 15 stories on his brother.
Well, him and his brother.
He only had a broken arm and his brother died.
Yeah.
And they said they never found out who it was that had done it, that he just remembered he was standing over them laughing with red eyes.
Crazy red eyes and that high pitched
squeaky laughing voice. Or
squeaky voice. That's right. It's interesting because you're in a movie theater, which is a storytelling place, and you get the exposition behind Valiant, right? And we've been able to put the pieces together prior to this by exposition wanderings of the camera, effectively showing us stuff that puts the story together enough.
And Dolores said a toon killed his brother, dropped a piano on his head.
But now we get the full story.
Right.
It's all these tropes, all of these cartoon tropes, but played out on a human, right?
Right.
You know, that's the difference between comedy and tragedy, is if you drop an anvil on a guy from, you know, two blocks away, you know, it's comedy. Aha, slapstick, right? But you drop an anvil on a guy like next to you, you know, and you're in the splash zone effectively. It's a tragedy, right? And that's, you know, effectively what we see here is with the Toons, physical violence is just a way of life. It's just how you walk down the street.
Well, they don't die from it. Like, right. There's no consequence of physical violence on a Toon.
As far as we can tell. Like, and right, that's, right. You know, there's these questions about, like, who was the weasel shooting at and all that. In Toontown, humans are not immune. So a human can get killed by a Toon object or a Toon thing, right? And that's, I'm not going to say important for later. It's just, it's an interesting thread within this world that they've built, that while the Toons are immune to human violence, the humans are not immune to Toon violence, which I think probably explains why Judge Doom has the far reaching abilities he does, that we only see police forces in civilized or modern civilized countries, they only have those powers in dystopian universes, right? Like, you only end up with Judge Dredd scenarios in Judge Dredd scenarios. Like, you only have a cop who can also execute and act as judge, jury, and executioner in those environments. But I think it's the nature of the Toon violence. They don't hurt each other necessarily, but they can hurt the humans.
Right.
And so it's sort of this protective measure. You've almost seen that Hollywood has, or that LA has bestowed upon its jurist, as we hear the judge call himself later.
You see, you know, Eddie take out his flask and his drinking and how it affects him. And then just like that. So we had our 10 seconds of a serious moment in this Disney movie. And then right then you cut into Roger just blubbering like a child, you know, going, if a Toon killed my brother, I'd hate me too. And
no wonder you hate me.
No wonder you hate me, right?
Wiping the tears away with his own ears.
And then you go back and forth. He's like, I don't hate you. Yes, you do. No, I don't. Yes, you do. You hate me. Otherwise, you wouldn't pull on my ears and all those times. And then he's like, I'm sorry I pulled on your ears. He's like, all the times he pulled on my ears? All the time, you know, like when you feel bad for somebody, you know.
Yeah, it's just like a kid conversation.
Yeah. I don't hate you.
Yeah, I don't hate you. Just annoy the bejesus out of me.
Yeah, and just like a child or like a puppy, he's like, oh, you know, put it there, buddy, pal. And then at that moment, you hear the music from whatever's on the screen change, and Roger gets excited. Oh, I hope it's another cartoon. And it turns out to be the news.
The news. I hate the news.
Like a child.
Yeah. Just like a kid.
And that's when Dolores comes in, sits down next to Eddie, and he's like, hey, did you get everything packed in the car? And he's like, yeah, I had to ditch the weasels right after you called, but I had to shake the weasels. This is the romantic moment in the movie. You know, he's like, oh, you know, sorry about all the trouble it cost. And he's like, oh, it's nothing. He's like, you know, he's like, why don't you find yourself a good man? And she's like, I have a good man. The whole Humphrey Bogart and Casablanca kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. And they're leaning into each other to kiss.
And then the camera flips around behind them, and you see Roger right in between them, like, you know, in a forced perspective kind of way, you know, just staring. His ears are drawn up into the shape of a heart. You hear him sigh. He's
got hearts in his eyes.
Like, oh, please don't mind me.
Oh, please don't mind me.
They're like, all right, that's our cue to go ahead and get out of here.
So this establishes that Dolores and Eddie both still have feelings for each other. And it's still mutual on both sides of the ball. See, most of the experience we have of Dolores and Eddie up to this point is Dolores being pretty cheesed off at Eddie. He owes her back money for something. she catches him with his pants down. And, you know, they got to hide Roger in the bar and hide him in the back. And so, like, you do get this feeling, this real question mark about where she stands with Eddie. And this scene, you know, just puts it. So, yeah, they're still very much love interest for each other. But it's in a very private detective real quick. You know, there's not a lot of depth to the scene. And obviously Roger spoils it.
Right.
But there's not a lot of follow on either. This is in a lot of ways the exposition bridge between, you know, the first part of the plot, the setup, and then, you know, the execution of some of the crimes. And the scene ends with Eddie figuring out, at least to a certain extent, what's going on.
Right, because the newsreel in the back talking about the real estate deal between RK Maroon, the CEO of Maroon Cartoons, and the president of Cloverleaf.
Yep.
The company that bought the red car. Then we see Eddie pull into Maroon Studios with Roger in the back. Well, not in the back. He's up front, and he's actually hiding.
He's trying to hide in the car seat, but doing it badly because he's a cartoon, right?
Well, you know, and Eddie's like, oh, what are you, scared? He's like, me? Don't be ridiculous. And he comes out, his teeth are chattering with his hand in the air, his teeth chattering, you know. He goes, when you called Maroon, you told him you had the will, but you don't. And if he finds out, he's going to be mad. He was like, he might try to kill you. He goes, I can handle a Hollywood cream puff. I just don't want the odds to change. You cover my back. And then he's like, yeah, I'll cover your back. Keep my eyes peeled, my ears to the ground. And nobody's going to get the drop on Roger Rabbit. And he's doing this. He's backing up against this wall.
Walking backwards.
His frying pan hits him in the head.
Well, I love like halfway through this speech, the frying pan starts to ease itself out from behind the wall. And then slam hits him in the head. And then he slowly gets dragged around the corner. Like, and you don't see who did it. But it's just such a tuned scene. Frying pan.
You see his body getting dragged behind the wall.
Yeah.
And then it flips to the inside the office. And you see RK Maroon has a gun in his hand and he puts it in his pocket. He's got his back turned to this wall that spins.
Yeah, and let's look at Maroon. Like, we go from, you know, the first time we see Maroon, and even the second time we see Maroon, he looks
pretty cleaned up.
Cleaned up, fairly well put together, sort of has a handle on the situation, knows what's going on. We see Maroon now, and he is not looking good. Like, he is sweating.
He's enjoyed a lot of iced tea.
Yeah, I don't have a way to say that that's not vulgar. It's sweating. Sweating bullets. Yeah. There we go. Sweating bullets. You know, obviously enjoyed some iced tea. He's got
that
some bags.
That was the first thing that came to my mind. What came to your mind?
I'm not gonna say it.
I'm just saying. I mean, like, how was that not the first thing that came to mind? Sweating bullets. I mean, it's a pretty common thing.
Anyways. So, you know, it's what comes into your mind. Anyways, what were we talking about? Oh, yeah, Maroon. He looks pretty, you know, he looks like either he's been on a bender or he's coming down from something more hard. And I'm coming down. He looks like he's had a bad go of it. His shirt's all undone. His vest is undone. He's got his tie, but it's a little loose. You know, he just doesn't look like he's had a good day, maybe a week. Very different from the guy we saw in the newsreel who was making the deal.
And so he's got his back to this poster, this cartoon poster, and the wall spins and it's Valiant comes up behind him, taps him on the shoulder, and Maroon turns around, like jumps, you know, and turns around. Like, and Eddie says, "What's up, Doc?"
Yes. What's up, Doc?
You can see the wall between him and Toons is starting to come down. And Maroon goes, what are you trying to do? Give me a heart attack? And he says a great line. He goes, you got to have a heart first to have an attack. You got to have a heart before you can have an attack.
Yeah.
Maroon's like, hey, you got the will? And he's like, yeah, I got the will. You know, kind of shows a little bit in his pocket. But he's like, yeah, I got the will, but you got the money. because I can tell you it ain't going to come cheap.
It's going to come with some iced tea. That's what it's going to come with. See, wanders
that's right.
back over to the large goes over flask. To his
fancy tea set.
Iced tea in the background. Even has seltzer water as part of his fancy tea set. I mean,
you know, so if you want that bubbly fancy. Iced tea.
That's right.
Because that's a thing, bubbly iced tea. I mean, I guess there kind of is because there's Sprite iced tea now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they choose iced tea with Sprite.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
That's what I thought too. I saw a video where someone was like, it's nothing to write home about, but it's not awful.
Is this something they did at Taco Bell? This sounds like a Taco Bell thing.
No, it's out in, you go to the convenience store, it's there.
Every once in a while, Taco Bell does, you know, end up with something that's good. I'm not, the Baja Blast is not it, but there's like a mango peach brisk tea that's really good.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Teas.
No, it's really good.
Lemon and sweet tea. That's it. No raspberry. Mango
something or other.
No, like that.
Yeah, raspberry's not great.
Oh,
I mean,
oh.
And I'll tell you about peach. Oh. If you try and do unsweet peach tea, it tastes terrible. It just tastes awful. Awful.
See, I drink unsweet tea if I want to be like, yeah, I'm being an adult.
Normally that's what I drink. No
sugar for me today.
I drink unsweet tea. You know, I get the blackberry iced tea when I go to Chili's. Ugh. And I tell them unsweet. And they put that in and it makes it sweet enough. But if you go to like Texas Roadhouse and you get peach tea, it does not make it sweet. And it just makes it terrible. Like you have to get like half and half or sweet tea with peach tea because the peach flavoring, the extract is just not good. Yeah, iced tea. It's complicated subject. I know we haven't spent nearly as much time in this episode as we have in the past. I do apologize to our fans who enjoy our iced tea conversations. But back to the matter at hand, Eddie does not get his iced tea this time.
At least not yet, because we cut off before we see him get to the iced tea, because the next thing we see is Roger getting thrown into the back of a car, into the trunk of a car, not just the back, the trunk. And when you close the lid, you see that it was, surprise, surprise, Jessica Rabbit stuffing the frying pan into her tiny purse.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. She does hammer space that frying pan.
That bag of holding.
So for those who are not familiar, hammer space is so named because of cartoons pulling large mallets and hammers out of tiny spaces like purses. And so frying pan into the purse is a hammer space trick. That is a, you know, yet another cartoon trope. As this movie hits every cartoon and private detective noir trope simultaneously in the same movie. That's why it's one of the best films of all time.
I was going to say, you say it like it's a bad thing. I mean, it's just wonderful.
Yeah, no, they do it. And they do it so well. And it's funny because like this description of how his brother dies, taking it face value, is ridiculous. Like it's a script from a cartoon, effectively.
Right.
But you don't laugh.
Right.
Like you don't laugh when he says it. It's not funny.
Because he's dead. Like the end of that gag in a cartoon, he'll pop up through the lid of a piano if he were a cartoon and have the key, you know, the piano keys in his mouth and birds flying around. No, that didn't happen. He got whacked and he stayed down.
Yeah.
That's the difference there. So we go back up to the office and Maroon's like, hey, I want to, you know, you said you got the will. I want to see it now. And actually, you do see Eddie with his tea. And R.K. Maroon has the audacity to knock it out of his hand. He wasted spilling, good tea.
Spilling perfectly good.
Good tea.
Good tea.
It's just awful. It's a Make monster. It
Santori time. We'll do that movie someday, folks.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
If you're wondering what that is, that's your homework. Tell us which movie we're referencing.
I still need to go buy a bottle.
It's good. It's good whiskey. Like, I've had it.
If you're a whiskey person, I'm not. But, I mean, I'll do it because of the movie. I mean, I'm that person.
I mean, I did, you know, I drink Drambuie whenever we watch Kill Bill. I'm not a big Drambuie fan. Right. You have 15 minutes to finish the bottle. So it's up to us. We got to get everybody involved, because otherwise it's just me and you.
Were you with me when I did that in Florida?
I think so.
With the CVS guys?
Oh, no, not with the CVS guys. No.
Ooh, I was the only one that drank it.
Ooh.
That was a bad night.
Yeah, that's a bad idea. Yeah, I don't know if we're ever going to review that movie. If you don't know, the movie we're talking about in that one is Kill Bill Volume 2, in which Bill, during his exposition about
Superman,
life, the universe, and everything, and Superman in particular, he drinks an entire bottle of Grand Bowie. Now, in film time, it's like several hours, or at least an hour. But in, you know, run time, it's like, I don't know, 10 minutes.
If that.
Yeah.
Anyways, so R.K. Maroon knocks the tea out of Eddie's hand and forcefully reaches into his coat pocket and grabs the paper. And he starts reading it. And what he's reading is Roger's love letter to Jessica. And as he's reading it, Eddie slowly reaches behind him and grabs a bottle of seltzer. And halfway through the letter, RK's like, "What is this, some kind of joke?" And Eddie goes, "No, this isn't." Squirts the seltzer right in his face. And then, bam, right in the face, right in the nose.
Bow, right in the, right kisser. In the kisser. He like really sets that punch up. It's almost like a slow-mo. Like, oh, this guy's stuttering. I can really line my knuckles up to his nose. And then he swings. Like, it's right. It's this real film noir punch. It's a little bit ridiculous on the setup, but takes care of Maroon in a one go. He's down on the ground and his gun's out.
Maroon falls to the floor. Eddie picks him up by the tie. And, you know, Maroon's like, "What are you going to do to me?" He goes, "Well, I'm going to listen to you spin the story of the Cloverleaf scenario. And you're going to tell me the story of greed, sex, and murder." And as he's pulling him across the office, you see him pull out, from the very beginning of the movie, the film editing contraption that Maroon was, you know, looking over the shoulder of one of his employees as they were editing a film. And then you see him take Maroon, Eddie take Maroon's tie and put it into the film feeder.
Yeah.
And start wringing it through, you know, pulling it tight, pulling this tie tight.
"What are you doing? Stop it. Don't do that."
Stop it. Stop. Yeah. "I'll tell you everything.
I'll tell you
everything.
I'll tell you that I'm a dead man."
He goes, "I just wanted to use the photos to blackmail Acme.
I had a chance to sell my studio, but they wouldn't buy unless
they had Toontown.
Acme sold, yeah, unless they had Toontown. Acme had to sell his, and he wouldn't sell." Then he says, "Who?" You know, he's trying to figure out who wants Toontown. And he says, "If I tell you that, I'm a dead man." And
then you're gonna tell me if you don't tell me. And he goes, "Unless Acme's will shows up by midnight tonight, Toontown will be laughing in hell."
And Eddie's kind of confused at that point. He's like, "What do you mean?" And Maroon starts to go into his own exposition. "You know, I worked with Toons all my life. I didn't want to see them, you know, get..."
I was just going over the scene, and in the subtitles, he says, "Unless Acme Will shows up by midnight tonight, Toontown's going to be land of the free." I'm pretty sure that's not what he said. I'm like 90% sure that's not what he actually said.
Yeah. Pretty sure it was laughing in hell.
In hell, right.
Mr. Falcon. Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
Who's Mr. Falcon? And so what you'd saw as he was saying that was a gun coming from the blinds of the window of Maroon's office, and then three shots put into Maroon's back.
Is it three? I thought it was two. I know it was more than one, but either way, I don't know why I'm quibbling over that.
You're petty.
Yeah, what matters is, well, so before he gets shot, though, he's trying to explain to Valiant that Toontown's going to get erased off the map. Like that
okay,
he didn't want to see the Toons all die.
Two were put into R.K. Maroon, and two were shot at Eddie, but went into the chair.
Okay, so we were both wrong. It was four.
You feel better? We're even now.
Yeah, I do feel better. Feel a lot better.
Well, that's all that's important to this show, I guess.
Yeah. So, but yeah, Maroon is trying to explain that he doesn't want the Toons to die. And I don't know how much he gets across to Eddie. And I don't know exactly what he says either, but it's something like, "I worked with Toons all my life. I didn't want to see
them destroyed."
them destroyed. And Eddie's at this point, he's like, what the hell are we talking about here? Because like, to Eddie, it felt like this was a play at owning the Toons or owning right. Toontown. And, you know, that would give you the ability to effectively monopolize Toons in pictures. I mean, that could be worth, you know, a lot of money.
It's the plot thickens point in the noir.
Right.
Yeah. You know, the detective thought he had it all figured out and really he wasn't even close yet.
Yeah.
And so after the gunshots stop, Eddie comes out and runs to the window to see who it was. And what he sees is Jessica Rabbit fleeing from the studio. Mm-hmm. And then you see Eddie come running out of the office, you know, outdoors, and he sees the car Jessica Rabbit is driving go by him, and Eddie yelling, Roger, because he knows that Roger was kidnapped.
Yeah. Shocking nobody. Roger failed in his backing Eddie up.
And so now we have yet another car chasing scene. They tear off into the night, into the LA Hills, and then they go by past a sign that says Toontown with an arrow. Mm-hmm. So clearly there's a way to drive into Toontown from the real world, and it's through this tunnel. And for whatever reason, Eddie decides he's going to stop outside the tunnel because, well, okay, we know the reason. He hasn't been in Toontown in forever because he doesn't like it. And he's staring down at one of his fears. And there's this great shot just focusing in on Eddie as he realizes he has to go into Toontown to save Roger.
Yeah.
He throws his real gun into the car, into the seat of the car. And you see him get out his detective's case, this wooden box, which, I mean, maybe you knew, maybe people know, maybe people don't know, but I didn't until I saw this movie. It's a gun box.
Yeah.
And he opens it up, and inside is a cartoon revolving pistol.
A hand cannon, effectively.
Hand cannon.
Hand cannon revolver.
Well, yeah, because it's stubby and fat, and, you know, and
yeah.
It's obviously a cartoon. It's like a massive, like you said, a hand cannon.
Yeah, it's like a sawed-off 45, you know, revolver here. It's funny to me that as a kid, this was one of my most remembered slash favorite scenes, was the introduction of these bullets.
I was going to say, because of the cowboy bullets, the five cowboys and the one Indian bullet.
One Indian bullet, yeah. This is definitely a gag you would not be able to get away with in the modern era. Like, there's no, you know, over the last, you know, 15, 20 years of filmmaking, there's no way they could pull this kind of a joke off. But, you know, I think they do. And I love, like, he takes the, you know, the curtain back and they all wake up.
Right. Andy Valiant, well, I haven't seen you in nigh on to 5 years. Where you been? And he just says, like, you know, like a Dirty Harry kind of way, drunk.
Possibly one of the best delivered lines in the movie.
So you guys feeling frisky? Yeah. And they all jump into the chambers.
Yep.
Oh, I guess this is pretty good too. So he takes out his, you know, the bullets go in, he closes the revolver and the revolving chamber, and then takes out his whiskey bottle from his coat, and he's going to make like he's going to drink from it. Instead, he throws it in the air and shoots it with his gun, and the first bullet to come out is the cartoon bullet Indian.
Yeah.
Doing the Indian chant all the way up, and then all of a sudden he pulls out an axe and
pulls out a tomahawk and smashes the glass. It's the only successful bullet he fires out of that gun. So I like, spoilers. You know, in this scene, it's fairly short. You know, we get the introduction.
It's Wild Turkey.
Right. Yeah. But it's Eddie facing down his fears and kind of deciding to be, you know, a better man. Like, I'm going to go face my fears and save Roger, and I'm not going to have to drink myself into doing it. Right. I'm going to pour out this delicious iced tea onto the ground, and I'm going to throw the bottle up and shoot it, you know, with my bullets that can go find their target. Except when they can't. And it is a very character growth scene that happens in a very short amount of time. That's punctuated by this, you know, this ridiculous cartoon gun and bullets.
It's the hero moment. It's the rising right. hero moment when all of a sudden all his human frailties and you know, things that make him flawed. All of his, you know, his flaws seem to just disappear.
Right.
Because he's, you know, met with the heroic moment.
Yeah. This is a trope not just in, you know, PI movies or cartoons. This is a trope in storytelling. Mm-hmm. Right. This is a hero's journey trope where there's a variety of the hero's journey stories. And this is cut from the variety of the old master who has put down his sword or gun or laser sword or blaster and has gone into obsequity, or, you know, in this kind of movie, you know, the private detective movie, has gone into a drunken stupor and has been out of the game, but who comes to a point where he realizes not only what he has to do, but also that has the skill sets to do this. A lot of times when you have this kind of stuff happen in a story where you have a scene change, or you have the villain has escaped with, you know, the money or the Maltese Falcon or the girl or whatever into a place that I can't go and I've got to go get help. Right. That's a lot of, but in these kinds of hero stories, it's not, I've got to go get help. It's this person has escaped into a place that I am particularly trained for and have a background and know what I'm doing in, but it's part of a past that is difficult to deal with. And that is the hero moment, deciding, okay, I'm going to put the past in the past and I'm going to move forward and do the heroic thing I need to do.
So this would probably be a good part to stop.
Yeah.
While we did not do this in 11 minutes, we did in fact do 12 minutes of this movie.
Oh my gosh. Are you kidding me?
No. We started this at the 57th minute of this movie and we're ending at the 1 hour and 9 minute of this movie.
I thought we had gotten so much further. Oh my god, there's gonna be 10 of these. This is gonna be our longest running show.
According to what I can see here, there's 34 minutes left in this movie. That's including the credits. So let's see where the credits stop.
Yeah, the movie is only an hour and a half long. It's an hour and a half long, and we're gonna end up doing 10 episodes on this movie.
So like without even trying. An hour and 37 minutes, we're at 109, so that's what, 26 minutes left. That's at least two more episodes.
This is what, five? I want to say
four.
No, we've done four. This is five, because number three was 12 minutes long, number four was 11 minutes, and we made it back to 12.
Just we're saying. Gonna
get 7 episodes out of Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yep.
I told you this was a good movie.
So congratulations, Pat. We did in fact keep our promise at not only just doing 11 minutes of the movie, we went to 12.
Yes. And that's why our patrons love us. So if you enjoyed this content, think it may be worth $1, possibly even $1 a month, head on over to Patreon, search for Pat and the Fat Man, or go to our website, patandthefatman.com, click on the Patreon button, go to Patreon, become a patron, help us make this show listenable, because I promise you, if you listen to just the raw edit, you'd be disturbed. Yeah, none of it. None of it. So if you'd like to interact with us, maybe tell us what movies we were referencing that we didn't bring up and what we'll talk about in the future. Remember, for a good time, make it Centauri time.
Centauri time.
We're on Facebook, Pat and the Fat Man. We're on Instagram, at Pat the Fat Man. There's a Twitter handle, at Fatman1238. And as well as a website where you can comment on the shows themselves, or you can leave us feedback, I believe, on Spotify now. If you're not going to become a patron, which is okay, not everybody can, but we really, really do appreciate it. And, you know, if we made you laugh, maybe we're worth it. But if you're not, please rate us highly. The higher you rate us on YouTube Music or on Amazon or on Spotify or on Apple or however you happen to get your podcasts, the more it's going to serve us to the general public at large.
I mean, I don't know if Pat's worth it, but I'm definitely worth it.
He's definitely worth it, folks. I am too. But as always, word of mouth is definitely the way to go. So please share us with all your family, friends, and anyone you meet on the street. I'm Pat.
I'm the Fat Man.
Stay classy.
See you next time, folks.
What was that?
You mean like a normal?
I feel dirty now.
All that tells me is that I win.
Touche, sir. Touche.